How do you make business problems disappear? Wrap them in bacon. For business owners, marketing execs, and anyone trying to grow your business, pump your profits, and make more while doing less, welcome to Bacon Wrapped Business with Brad Costanzo. Sizzling hot business advice guaranteed to make you fat. Profits. Every week, our chefs will serve you proven recipes for ramping up your revenue. Now, here's your host, Brad Costanzo.
All right, welcome to Bacon Wrapped Business. This is Brad Costanzo, and got a fun episode today. Never would I have had guessed, like 10, maybe 11, 12 years ago, I can't remember exactly when I was reading various books by today's guest, Tucker Max, that I think that, you know, a decade later, I would be interviewing him on the show. This was back before I started, you know, my business and, or actually several businesses. And today's topic is actually going to be very business related. So Tucker Max, if you're not already familiar with him, is a multiple New York Times best-selling author. He made his bones and actually created the, the genre of fratire with books such as I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, Assholes Finish First, Hilarity Ensues, etc. And these books really just kind of detailed and chronicled his life, drinking, partying, etc. However, in the past several years, it's been really cool to watch Tucker migrate over to a very successful entrepreneur, publisher, and somebody who's really made a complete switch in the topics of the things he's doing. And he's helping other aspiring writers, entrepreneurs, business people get books out of their head and using a lot of the strategies he's done to not only write them, get them out quickly, but then some of the publishing strategies. So I invited him on the show today to talk a lot about that and anything else that comes up. And with, you know, a guy like Tucker, who knows where it'll go. But Tucker, it is a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now you're in, you're in Austin, is that right?
I live in Austin. Right now, I'm actually in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, nice.
But normally, I'm in Austin, yeah.
Very cool. So, man, there's a million questions I would love to ask you. But, you know, one of the things I'm most fascinated about are, you know, some of the strategies that, you know, you've used, not only to grow your business of, you know, book in a box and, you know, kind of this reinvention of yourself, but also some of the, you know, kind of cool strategies that you're seeing other people use. Now, I'll let you tell me, you know, tell the audience a little bit more about what Book in a Box is, just so that people get familiar with it. But then I kind of want to dive into some questions that hopefully you haven't been getting asked by every other, podcast host, et cetera.
Yeah. So Book in a Box, honestly, when I describe it, you'd be like, oh, I can't believe this didn't exist before. It's like, basically we figured out a way to turn, someone's idea into a book in their words, in their voice, without them having to do the typing. So we just have a very structured interview process that kind of goes through the entire book creation process. You know, positioning, outlining, interviewing for the content, transcribing and editing. We do all the work on the back end, and all the author has to do is have to know what they're talking about, because we don't add any content, which, you know, unlike ghostwriting, we're not actually adding the ideas, it's theirs. And they just have to get on the phone after that. Those are the only two things you need. And so it's, if you have a great idea for a book, but you're, like most people, really busy and don't have time or desire to sit down and figure out how to write a book, it's like the perfect solution.
Exactly. Now, these are just kind of for clarification. These are primarily nonfiction books, right? Like, you guys probably don't
all nonfiction.
Yeah, I would think so.
No. That process doesn't work with fiction.
Yeah. So it's really funny because legitimately 18 minutes ago, I got an email, a Facebook message from my friend Shalina, and she just said, "Hey, Brad, how's life? Are you still doing Amazon book stuff for people these days?" So years ago, when I sold my first business, online publishing business, information products, etc. And I kind of stumbled into consulting. And one of the very first things I did is I noticed a buddy of mine had a great info products and other stuff, but he didn't really have a book. So I took some of his content and I helped him do this exact same thing. Very manual process. I really didn't even know what I was doing. And then I helped him publish it on Amazon. Word got out. And I've done about 8 of these just as kind of an informal service for clients in the past. So I know exactly [S2] Right. [S1] What goes into it. And I know how much, you know, work it can you know, it can be. But this was kind of funny that she literally emailed me about this right before we jumped on about this exact same stuff. But let me ask you this. So with your process, how long does it typically take when you've got a really willing, author who's like,
about
yeah, I'll
20
do
hours.
You say.
It takes the author about 20 hours on the phone over 6 months.
Okay.
We do everything else on the back end. We charge $20,000. Mm-hmm. So it's not cheap, but relative to sort of like a good ghostwriter really is going to cost at least $50,000. Mm-hmm. And all that does is get you a manuscript. Right. And really you should be paying $75 to $100 for a really good one. At $50, you could still potentially get one who's not very good. That's the real difference is this is a way to sort of turn ideas into books at scale. Mm-hmm. And to do it in a way that's really simple and really user-friendly. Because like, here's the thing. Most people know what they're talking about, and they know how to talk. But the act of writing is a totally different cognitive skill than thinking or talking. So we've just essentially separated these things that people traditionally put together but don't have to necessarily go together.
That makes sense. So, for instance, if I had a book idea, we would do an initial consultation. You'd find out is it really a viable idea or not? Like, how do you determine viability?
Yeah, so our sales process is really more of a discovery process. Mm-hmm. Like, most people who come to us, by the time they get on the phone with us, they know, like, this costs $20,000. I know the quality of books they produce. So the question is, would they make a good client and what are their questions? Mm-hmm. And so for us, what we have to figure out is, do they have the book in their head already? Which doesn't mean they have to know exactly what they want the book to be about. What we actually find is that most serious professionals have two or three different books in them. And so the question isn't, do they have a book? It's what book should they be doing first, right? Mm-hmm. And so we obviously can help with that process. That's sort of how the process works. We have to figure out, one, do they have at least one viable book in them? And if the answer is no, then we can't work with them. And then the other question really for us is, do they have, like, are their expectations reasonable? Is there a kind of a reasonable ROI for this? Because we don't want to be in the business of, you know, rich assholes
vanity books.
A bunch of money. Right. Like, doing vanity books, it's not even that I have it's not even that they're necessarily bad. It's that normally people who do those don't have much to say and they have totally unrealistic expectations about what a book can do for them. Whereas someone like you who owns a business or is an entrepreneur or is a C-level executive, they look at a book as what it is, which is essentially an all-purpose marketing tool that gets them authority, credibility, speaking gigs, clients, all those sorts of things. It's directly tied to a result, not tied to their ego.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you find that, as I have when I've used this, that the people who use it as the marketing tool and understand that it plays a much bigger picture, they have a lot more success as the ones who are just, hey, I want to sell a bunch of books.
Oh, of course. Yeah. We don't even work with the other type anymore.
Right.
Like, we have a whole process where we deeply understand, like, honestly, most serious professionals who can afford, you know, to pay for our service have a book in them. Mm-hmm. They have knowledge in their heads that other people find valuable. The real question is not, do they have a book? The real question is, what are they going to use the book for? And what are their expectations? And yeah, the people who look at it like an investment, a book is an investment in themselves, in their career, in their company, they almost always do really well because our process, what we do is we start by asking, like, why are you writing the book? Who do you want to reach? And what are you saying that's interesting to them? You know, why are they going to pay attention?
Yeah.
And so we help people directly nail down exactly how they're going to use the book before we even outline the book. That's how you market a book, is you've got to deeply understand what result you're trying to get from it, who you're trying to reach, and why they're going to care. Yeah, and if you understand that, everything else is easy.
Yeah. Start with the end in mind. You know, how would you use this? What are some of the more, the cooler, more ingenious methods of using a book, you know, to grow your business that you've kind of seen people do to leverage it besides just handing it out as a calling card? I mean, I don't know if you, how involved you guys stay in touch with some of the authors necessarily after it, but are there any kind of cool stories that you've seen people leverage?
I mean, there's so many things. It really just depends on, it depends on your business, right? Mm-hmm. So what I would say generally is you need to, most people look at a book as like a validation for their ego. Yep. You know, they don't really look at a book as a marketing tool. But once you start looking at it as a marketing tool, then you can really start to free up your mind and start to see how it can help you. I'll give you a great example. We have one client who is a financial planner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like financial planners can't advertise, like the ones who are in FINRA and whatever. They have to basically rely on word of mouth, yeah. Right? So for him, client acquisition is difficult. So what we did is we did a book that was, he specializes with divorced women. Like, it's not his only clients, but he, for whatever reason, he has a lot of wealthy divorced women. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a wealthy woman and you're about to go through a divorce, there's like 10 things you should really be doing that can help you sort of get through your divorce. So he wrote a book that explained all those things. Now, a lot of the things are things that he did. Some are things that lawyers should be doing, whatever. But then here's what he did that was really smart. So it printed out, we did it in hardcover, and it's a beautiful hardcover. And then he sent the book out to every divorce lawyer he knows. Because in the book, what he did is he put in the book a free financial consultation for a woman if the book goes through, if they get the book from one of the divorce attorneys, right? Mm-hmm. And so he didn't even put the book on Amazon. He actually just looked at this book as essentially the most baller brochure that he could ever create. And so what's ended up happening in the 6 months since that came out is he's gotten like, he's probably done about 100 consultations, and he signed, I think, over a third of those women as clients. And like, the average client is bringing in like $10 million. So he's made a huge amount of, he's greatly increased his assets under management, and it's cost him, seriously, maybe at most 40 grand.
Wow.
Like, that includes us and buying the books and shipping them and the time value of his time. Like 40 to 50 grand.
Yeah, that's awesome. So he's a financial advisor. He specialized, like you said, wealthy divorced women. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So he sent it to the divorce lawyers.
Exactly. Because that's the first person, a woman who's getting divorced talks to is a divorce lawyer, and she needs financial advice, and the lawyers don't give financial advice. So what that book did is it became something every lawyer can then give that to, to every woman who comes in the office, and they can say, listen, read this. It tells you the 10 things you need to do financially. Plus, this guy's a friend of mine, or he's someone I know. He'll get on the phone with you for an hour and do a free consult specific to you only if you come through me.
Yeah.
See, that's what he did, is he made it like sort of an exclusive thing. And so like that way the divorce attorneys are not only more likely to give the book away, they're going to encourage these women to call him. You know, think about that. Like, It's insane. A hardcover book at scale costs about $1.70 to print. Beautiful, amazing hardcover.
Basically plus free.
Right. It's basically, I mean, plus shipping, call it even $4, right? So he sent like 100 books to whatever it was, 20 different, 30 different divorce lawyers. So he's, call that, whatever, $5,000 plus the time value of his time. But they're all sales calls. They're all potential sales calls. So he has he spent nothing basically relative to the, every $10 million he's making whatever, 10, 20, 100 grand a year.
Absolutely.
So it's like the easiest thing on earth for him.
Yeah.
Here's the thing here's the genius is that he didn't try and write a book for everybody. He wrote a book that was deeply specific to divorced wealthy women. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say about 50 to 60% of the advice in that book is applicable to everybody, but he didn't title the book or position the book for everybody. He positioned it for a tiny niche. I mean, there are not a lot of women every year who are getting divorced and have like 10 million or more in assets, which is kind of that's like the dividing line for his book, right? And so he went right after those women. He went to all the attorney, there's not a lot of attorneys who specialize in that group, right? And so, but he didn't try and reach everybody. He went deeply niche. And he is the only book out there that is about this one subject. And he put it in front of the people who are like most likely to interact with those women.
Right.
Does that make
sense? Like, oh, no. So not only does it make sense.
The genius is that he's doing the opposite of what most people think you have to do with a book, which is move a bunch of copies, get a bunch of attention, except, that's why he's done so well, is because he didn't try and get any attention except the people that mattered for him.
Yep. So here's what I love about this. I was literally having this conversation, yesterday with a prospective client of mine who is, somewhere in the East Coast, and they are a financial advisor, and he has written a book. So it's already done, something about cashing out, how to get cash out of your business, primarily for like baby boom, baby boomer business owners, et cetera. So it's very specific to that. I was like, well, how are you using it? And it's basically just a calling card. And I was telling him that that's exactly what we need to do, is to get that in front of his potential referral sources like CPAs and attorneys and all of the, the clients of his, the people who could potentially refer him clients. And it's this exact method. Now, here's a fun take on this. You may already be familiar with this strategy, but when I've shared it with my clients, this is the first time I think I've really revealed it, over the air like this, but, cause I sometimes charge for this idea, which is, if you do have it on Amazon and you know who you want to reach, right? And it's not necessarily somebody you already know, but let's just say it's a prestigious divorce attorney here in, like I live in San Diego, prestigious divorce attorney in San Diego. If it's on Amazon, you go and you buy the book as a gift wrapped and everything with a card on Amazon, and you send it to their office, because it's very easy to find out who their office is. One of the things we know about Amazon is that gets opened by everybody, and it oftentimes will bypass the gatekeeper because they think it's, something personal. And in in that book where it's gift wrapped and it's got a little note, you could put something like, hey, I wanted you to take, I wanted you to have a copy of my book. I've got an idea that might help you grow your business, whatever. And you can even have a little short link to a quick YouTube video or whatever you did talking directly to that person. And, it's just so effective. The clients of mine who have done it going, oh my God, I can't believe it. They called me. They loved it. And I could see that as a great way to send it, just to get the relationships with like you said, those divorce attorneys that you don't know, and you let them know, yeah, how would you like to give this book out to your people?
That's a great, I'll tell you, who does this really well. Have you heard of John Ruhlin? He just came out with a book called Psychology.
I just bought that book off my buddy Dan Martell's recommendation 2 days ago, and I'm about a third of the way through it.
So John's a client of ours.
Oh,
we
nice.
Did that book.
Yeah. Really cool. So
we did the entire book start to finish, and we use a lot of his principles with our clients. Mm-hmm. You should have him as a guest, because he's really good at explaining. There's a lot of weird psychology with gifts, and there's a lot of ways to do it right and wrong.
Yeah.
That's a great way to do it. We were doing some things wrong. You should have him on.
I would love to.
That's a fantastic strategy.
Can you make an intro?
Really
I would
well.
Love to have him on.
Of course,
it was one of the things as I was reading through it. I knew immediately, this is huge. And as I was reading through it, I was like, I'd love to have this guy on. And as a matter of fact, one of the other strategies for like this other financial advisor client is he doesn't have any kind of a wow package or, kind of a welcome to the thing. Like I tell all my professional service clients, like create a big box of stuff just to kind of wow your new clients or potentially market to your prospective ones with two copies of your book in there, one to keep, one to give away, and then a handful of other potential gifts that represent something else. Yeah. So that's really cool. I didn't know he was a client of yours. It's a great book.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. It's really good. And he explains this, and we have a lot of our clients who do all kinds of, you should actually have John tell, I'll tell you the quick story, but have him tell you like what he did with the galleys of his book, which was really smart. So, a galley is normally, in publishing speak, that's like the pre-publication book, right?
Okay.
So that's like before it's totally proofed, you send it out 6 months ahead of release date to influencers because you want them to read it and then either give you a blurb or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, but they're normally really cheap, flimsy copies of a book, and everyone understands that, and it's cool, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ruhlin did the opposite. So he owns a leather production company that does all these leather gifts. He did a leather-bound version of his galley.
Oh, wow.
And this beautiful leather bag. And it came like almost like a Hermes gift kit or something. It was amazing. And sent it out to like 100 or 200 people who he wanted to reach, and got an amazing response rate. And it was like maybe $8 to $9 per thing instead of like, let's say, 3 to 4 with just a normal hardcover. So you're basically doubling the cost, but tripling or quadrupling the response rate, because it looks so beautiful and it works really well.
Yeah, it's more beautiful than the finished product. That's
exactly.
Awesome. Have you do you know, because he lives down in Austin? Do you know Alex Sharfin by any chance?
Yeah, we just had dinner with him and his wife.
I just interviewed him on my show yesterday, and he was talking about the strategy he did using his book Entrepreneurial Personality Type, about how he only printed 500. You know that story?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Uh-huh. For anybody else, you guys can go listen to the Alex Sharfin interview. I won't go into the details here, but yeah. So I've always been a huge proponent of that book as that first tip of the spear. I read somewhere, and God, I've Googled around looking for the stat that says something about like for people who have, you know, customers or whatever, that the lifetime value of a customer who comes in, or a client who comes in, and their very first thing was a book, is something like 2 to 3 times higher because of the enhanced credibility of a book. Like, oh man, I found him from this book, and it holds, you know, there's such a halo effect there, as opposed to if somebody comes in through your ebook giveaway or your webinar or something of that nature.
Yeah, I would say at least half of our clients, the main value they've seen from their book has been the indirect authority credibility value. Like these are, you know, high level Fortune 500 CEO types, some of them. And they're like, dude, I knew, but I didn't anticipate how it would change people's perception of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because here's the thing, man. Even though anyone can do a book right now, I actually think it's more impressive to have a book now than it was 10 years ago. Because 10 years ago, the only way you got a book is by having connections with a publisher or whatever. Like, you basically had to be a professional writer.
Yeah.
Right? Or you had to have like a really be famous otherwise, or it was a hard gatekeeper to get past. Now, because it's so easy, no one has a fucking excuse anymore, man. Like, if you don't have a book as a serious professional, I mean,
yeah.
What that tells people is like, either you don't have enough ideas, or you don't want your ideas tested, or you haven't been able to find time to write it. And so, like, a lot of people that we've seen were already very established people. They wrote their first book with us. Now they want to come back and do more because they're like, oh my God, I've had so many people tell me that, you know, oh, I knew you were smart, but I didn't realize how smart, so I read your book. Or, I knew X, but I didn't, you know, I knew something about you, but the book changed the perception, you know, because that's the thing, is you can't hide in a book. Yeah. You can definitely write a crap book and just throw it up on Amazon. But the thing is, everyone knows it. You know, if the cover looks stupid, if they, you know, do the preview and they read the first few pages and they're like, eh, this is all just platitudes and whatever,
you can lose.
You're setting yourself up to be judged. And the thing is, because it's so easy to do a book, it's still really hard to do a good book.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, we've seen so many people who have, this one woman, Melissa Gonzalez, she's like, it tripled her business in 2 years, all this sort of stuff her book did. You know what she talks about when she does media interviews? She says, my mom now introduces me as her daughter, the published author.
That's awesome.
She's like, I know, and it seems ridiculous, right? But books still hold this weird place in society.
Especially in the mass market, who doesn't still realize how easy it is, right? Like general population, it still is holding on to that credibility that, oh, wow, you're a published author, whether you published yourself or not.
Like Melissa's mom, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's changing on both sides. So the old side, right, is still like, oh, you're an author, it's a big deal. But people like me and you still, like when I went looking for a CEO coach, an executive coach, because Book in a Box was taking off and, you know, I don't know how to build a business. So I really had to learn. And, I read every goddamn book out there. First of all, I didn't even consider the consultants who didn't have books. Didn't even consider them.
Right.
Right? Didn't matter recommendation or anything, because how could I vet them if they didn't have a book, right?
You should have considered them and then made them a client. Like, oh, yeah, maybe I'll work with you once you use my service to get a book.
Exactly. Except the problem is I didn't have time to even go through that. Like, I needed someone quick. And so I read like 10 or 20, I bought 10 or 20 books by like the best executive coaches. Half of them were total garbage. Like, I stopped reading after five pages, threw the books out. The other half of the remaining half, I bailed halfway through. And I was basically left with two books. One was okay. One was incredible. And the incredible one, I went and hired the guy, and that Cameron Harrell, who wrote Double Double. And he's a client of ours now. He became a client of ours, and he did three books with us. But like,
that book was just recommended to me just recently by my friend Sean Stevenson. I don't know if you know Sean, but he just recommended. Double, he's like, this is an amazing double, book. What's that?
Meeting Suck. Double or Meeting Suck?
Double Double.
Yeah. So he just came out with the book Meeting Suck, and he's doing two more with us. Double Double is amazing. The problem is it's got a really dumb title.
Yeah.
Like a Double Double is a cheeseburger from In-N-Out.
Right. Exactly.
Like, no, we're going to get Cameron to redo that book with us, because a lot of the advice has changed and been updated. That's another dude you should have on your podcast. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, man, we worked with 300 people now. We've done 300 books. I interviewed so many executive coaches. Cameron was he was so much better than everyone else. Like, this is a dude who scaled multiple $100 million a year companies. So like, when I would ask him a question, like a deep, granular question, he not only knew the answer, he would like reframe the entire question and teach me like everything about that sector of business in like an hour. It was amazing dealing with this dude.
You know, that's kind of a cool segue to some things I wanted to ask you about, because, you know, you made a transition from just author who had some great success because you created some amazing books to now CEO of a service-based business. What were some of those biggest challenges that you saw yourself facing? You're like, man, if I don't get an executive coach and figure this crap out, I'm doomed. What were some shifts?
It's a great question. Here's the biggest shift, and I haven't really talked about this much publicly, but I ended up firing myself as CEO.
Yeah.
And we hired a professional. The dude's amazing. He was a client and then came on board because of what basically the question you just asked.
Yeah.
I realized that I was really, really good at certain things. And so my assumption is, well, I'll be good at everything, right? How hard can being a CEO be? I was totally wrong. It was so hard because there's a set of skills that I just don't have, dude. Like, a great CEO deeply understands their team. They like spending a lot of time with them, coaching. They're detail oriented, but they also understand strategy and the big picture. And, you know, it's just a really hard thing to do. I was only good at about a third of the job, and I was really great at a third, but the other two thirds I kind of stunk. And so, like, the lesson I learned was stop trying to be everything and stop thinking I can be great at everything. And instead, double down on what I'm great at. I spend all my time at the one third of things that I'm really great at. And I spend virtually zero time on the two thirds of things like that. I hired Cam to teach me those things, and he's a great teacher, but I realized I was learning slower than my company needed. My company was so fast that I was the throttle, you know? And so like, what I had to do, man, was face the uncomfortable truth that if I wanted to do what was best for the company and for my team, I had to move out of that position and get someone who was already ready today to lead, because I wasn't.
What are some of those things that you consider yourself, like that third of activities that you're really, really good at?
So it's basically one of our department heads, Hal Clifford, said, he summed it up this way. He said, Tucker, you need to spend all your time making culture and making it rain. And making strategy, culture, and rain. So, like, I'm great at marketing. I'm great at talking to people. I'm great at talking about what we do. I mean, I'm essentially still the public, not essentially, I am the public face of the company. And I'm still the largest shareholder by far. But I spend my time talking about the company with other people, not actually running day to day. And then strategy and culture, which is like, you know, like, what's our 10-year plan. I'm really great at. I'm really great at seeing things like ahead of time and understanding, like, okay, we need to move. You know, it's like saying we need to go to this spot, and then the CEO actually does the navigation, but I'm like, we need to go in this direction, and here's why, etc. And then culture, dude, which is like understanding large scale. How does our company need to, how do we message? How do we talk about ourselves? How are people perceiving us? What are we doing right that way? What are we doing wrong? How do we create the environment, both that people outside understand what we're doing and want to come in and be a part of it, and also that the team inside, the team working with us, our people understand what we're doing and we can get the best, you know, they can be the most productive possible, like that sort of stuff.
Right.
And it sounds like it kind of like everyone thinks they're good at that stuff. It's actually really hard to be good at it.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're doing a million other things.
Right. It's way harder. My mind is way harder to be good at execution. And JT is just like a beast at execution. Like nothing. He is so detail oriented. Nothing misses his eye. Like everything gets done. He is like a British like bulldog, man. Once he gets his teeth into something, forget it. It's done. I'm just not like that, man. I'm like, I want to do five things today. I don't want to, you know, and 50, all different. Yeah. I don't want to focus on sort of the details.
Yeah, you and I are a lot alike there. You bring up several kind of points. First of all, exactly what you're talking about. Have you read the book Rocket Fuel?
No.
Okay. You need to absolutely get that. I've recommended this to everybody. I had the author on the show just recently, but Rocket Fuel is the all about that relationship between the visionary and the integrator, who is your JT. And it's not just, okay, here's the personality traits and quirks and ups and downs of each side, but it's a framework for how your visionary, your CEO, which is like, or you, like the founder of the company, should be interacting with your integrator and the person who executes everything. And it was funny, he creates a lot of different frameworks, but one of them that I always remember is this. The integrator is always the tiebreaker. So you may come up with a lot of ideas and things you want to do, but I'm guessing you probably run these by JT and he'll take a look at the company. He'll say, okay, well, we don't have those resources right now, Tucker. Go come up with another idea. We'll get back to that.
Yeah.
But it's a framework for the meetings. It's a framework for everything else. And his whole thing is when you find that right visionary and that right integrator, your company works like rocket fuel. And it sounds like you've kind of discovered that. That's what one of the things I've been working on in my business. I have another business, a coffee brand, a national coffee brand that we sell online.
Which one?
Stiletto Coffee.
Oh yeah, I've heard of you guys.
Awesome. Yeah. So it's the only coffee marketed directly towards women. So it's got a very kind of sassy, classy vibe. And I was great at launching it with my wife, and she kind of handles all the quality control and coffee stuff. But now that launch is over and it's in that management thing, and I find myself doing micro tasks around this, I'm like, oh, get me out of here. So I'm currently like looking for my integrator there. But at the same time, you know, when you were talking about how you removed yourself from it so you can only work on the stuff that you're really, really good at and you're not messing with all the details, I kind of think of that as like that's why I consult. It's the grandpa business model or the grandparent business model. I get to come in and have all the fun and, you know, give the kids candy and do all the cool stuff that I'm good at. But then when it's time to take care of them and be super responsible, I get to hand them back.
Well, I mean, sort of. Yeah. Here's the thing though, is that like it's one of those things where what we do, it looks really easy from the outside. So everyone's like, oh, I want to be that person who just comes in for 2 hours a day and that's it. Except the problem is to get good enough where you can do that and be that is actually really, really hard.
Oh, yeah.
And so like, you know how like people, it's changed a lot, but it used to be like, you know, you would ask a woman, oh, do you work? Oh, no, you're a housewife.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
As if being managing a house and a family
a
and children wasn't two full-time jobs. It's an insane amount of work, right?
Yeah.
But people didn't really used to think of it as a job. I think a lot of creative things kind of go that way, is that like it's really easy to think, oh, how hard can it be to sit down and write a blog post or to talk about stuff on an interview or do whatever. It's actually really hard to do that stuff right. It just looks easy.
Right.
And it feels easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a huge difference mentally and when, like, thinking, which you probably spend a lot of time doing, thinking and strategizing from a high level and doing, and they're totally different brain functions. And if you're trying to constantly switch hats, I've wrecked
too much. Oh, no, I'm with you. Like, I do. I try, I try and keep 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. every day reserved for writing, thinking, reading, like no task-oriented stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the afternoons are calls and task-oriented stuff because of the high cognitive cost of switching between two things.
Yeah, and learn that the hard way. Are you writing another book at this time, or is there anything you're doing?
Yeah, so we actually have a book about our process. Mm-hmm. My assistant gave me a link. If your audience, if you have anyone in your audience who's, if you think about working with us, that's great. Just go to bookinabox.com, sign up, happy to talk to you. But people who really want to write a book who can't afford 20 grand, we wrote a book that describes our entire process, mm-hmm. exactly how to do it. Your people can go to bookinabox.com/bacon and download the book for free. It's on Amazon too. It's called The Book in a Box Method, but you can get the exact same book for free. And it's everything. It's all of our templates. It's all of our processes. It's everything you need to go step by step, to go from idea to finished book exactly the way we do it.
It's amazing. I downloaded it a couple days ago and I was going through it. I'm like, I was really impressed. And if it's any indication of the kind of work you guys do, it wasn't thrown together. It wasn't just a calling card. There's actual real life step-by-step strategies in there.
Of course, because it's not a lead gen for something else. Right. We figure if you're going to read the book and do it yourself, then you're not a client.
Right.
You know, the clients are the people who need to save time. They have money, but they can save time and they don't want to develop the expertise. So they just hire us. Mm-hmm. The people whose time is not worth that much, they're going to be doing it themselves. So we just figure, let's tell them exactly how to do it, exactly the way we do it, so they can get the book done.
Yeah, I love that.
It's not competition.
You know, earlier you mentioned something about that you're pretty good at, whether it was setting the culture, strategy, and seeing some of the trends in business, whether it's things that you should be capitalizing on or probably, you know, or sometimes some things that aren't going to be working. What are some of the trends you're seeing in business right now? I mean, I know you're probably connected with a lot of successful business people. What are you seeing out there?
You think, you want to know like more short term, more long term? What do you?
Some of the ones that are most top of your mind, most exciting. I mean.
Well, so I just read Kevin Kelly's The Inevitable.
That's on my wish list. It's good.
He's one of the great thinkers of our.
He's amazing.
Our century. Seriously. New Rules for a New Economy was written, I think, 15 or 16 years ago, and it perfectly described everything that's happened in the last two decades. It's amazing.
Wow.
And The Inevitable is the same thing. It's just updated. So if you want to deeply understand the mega trends that are coming, I cannot recommend a book more highly than Kevin Kelly's The Inevitable.
Nice.
But that's more of sort of like long-term secular mega trends.
Yeah.
Short-term stuff. You know what I'm seeing, man? Like the most important thing that I think your audience can apply is like we're starting to really see the shift between commodity from a commodity economy to a trust economy.
Mm-hmm.
So like, in a world where everything was commodified, 20th century economics is essentially industrial economics. You didn't really need to trust, right? Trust was nice if you had it, but it didn't matter that much. But in a consumerist sort of commodity economy, in a digital economy where almost everything is either free or totally replaceable, near free, what really matters now is trust. And I think most old companies, old economy companies, don't know how to develop trust. You're seeing the last gasp of this in politics right now. like you're seeing possibly the most cravenly corrupt politician of all time, Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. run against a total fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
They're the exact same age or like within a year of each other. They are totally the total embodiment, those two, of 20th century business. I think 21st century business is the total opposite. It is like, I want to do business with people who I trust, who I know, who I believe in, who care, all those sorts of things. And it's so easy to be kind, to care, to treat people well. It's free. And so many businesses don't do it. And I think if you really, really are in business now and you really focus on that, it's one of those things that creates compound growth. We've seen it. Our business has been around 2 years. Not even. We're coming up on our 2-year anniversary. Already 50% of our business is word of mouth, like client referral already. Because we focus so much on not just doing a great job that we do, but we focus deeply on the author experience and what it's like for people to deal with us. And by the time they're done, we're not perfect at it, but pretty much most of our authors, by the time they're done, love us. Not only do they love their book, but they love us. And so they become like
your evangelist
so much, right? They become evangelists. And we only get that because you get trust because you build a relationship.
Wow. Do a good job for somebody and that's the best marketing. That's so crazy.
Exactly. Do a good job. But then here's the thing though. This is an important distinction. From the very beginning, we were doing amazing books, but what we didn't do a good job at from the very beginning that we're doing really good at now is understanding that the objective end result of a book is only a small part of how people sort of rated us as a company. What really mattered, a big part, was their subjective experience in creating that book. Mm. You know what I'm saying? We always did a great job with the end product, but if someone has a kind of a crappy experience dealing with us, then even if they have an amazing book at the end, when you ask them about us, they're going to say, yeah, the book was great. And, you know, they were okay to deal with.
But I wouldn't go through it again. Yeah.
Yeah. Or even if they say, yeah, I'd probably do it again, but you know, I mean, they could be better. Then think about that as compared to, oh my God, they were so amazing to deal with. They anticipated everything. It was just seamless. And the book is amazing. You know, you'd think it'd be this crappy book, but instead it's the opposite. It's the most amazing thing I've ever come up with. And it felt like magic. The only difference between those two testimonials is how you treat that author as they go through the process. How you manage their subjective experience.
As far as their experience goes, what are some of the areas that you feel as though, because you said you're improving on that even as it goes, what are some of the areas that you think Book in a Box would even be better for the experience if it provided that it doesn't currently? Like, are there any missing pieces that you think if you could wave a magic wand, like, boom, we'd love to provide this for them?
You mean in terms of, like, providing a service or in terms of how we interact?
Either one. Well, here's an example. Like, let's say that I came to you, we got the book, 6 months later, boom, I've got this beautiful book. Is there any post-publishing follow-up, support services, things like that?
Question. So here's one of the main things of the book. No one wants a book. They want what they envision a book is going to get them.
Right.
Right. So what we started off just doing the book. And then what we realized is that no one's buying books from us. They're buying the attention and the status and the prestige and the credibility a book gets them. And they're buying the leads and the clients a book gets them. And they're buying the speaking gigs and they're buying all those results. Right. Mm-hmm. So just even though we were knocking it out of the park with books, just doing the book wasn't enough because most people didn't have any idea what to do with the book once it was done.
Yeah.
You know, and even just having a book by itself can, with basically no other marketing, can get a lot of benefits for a lot of people. But once you pour on a little bit of marketing juice on that, then that's when you really start to see the kind of the high level, advancements and changes. So to answer your question, what we've started, Zach Oberns, my co-founder, he is he started building a whole new division. We call it informally right now, we call it Platform and Box. Because the basic idea is people who want not just a book, but an entire ecosystem around a book.
Right.
So they want a blog, they want content pulled out of the book to share on guest posts and other media sites. They want other content extensions from the book. They want to be booked on podcasts. They want, even if it's just deeply in their niche, they basically want a slow drip of media and a way to capture it. They want an email list. They want all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Basically everything that a really good authority or expert, like someone like that has.
Yeah.
And so we started building that for people. We have five beta clients right now. That service is going to come and be offered wide probably at the beginning of next year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like expert platform in a box, as long as you are an actual expert and you actually know what you're talking about and you're a great coach or consultants or any of those sort of things, we can build, we're starting to be able to build the entire platform around it, including the book.
That's cool. And that's exactly where I was going with that. Like thinking, you know, what would be those great follow-ups? Like what would the person want next? And that's cool that you're capitalizing on that early, because I could see people going, hey, great, I got a book. Now what do I do with it?
What do I do now?
Yeah. Right? That's cool. Are there any other project, businesses, ideas and things that you're right now postponing because you either don't have the time, people, resources to work on them?
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm sure you're in the same boat as me. There's 50 things I could be doing right now. To me, Book in a Box was a great idea. Like great, like off the charts good. I don't see myself, other than obviously my family and kids, I don't see myself spending my time on anything else other than this. Because here's the thing. Book in a Box is just a subset of the larger idea. We actually named the company In a Box, not Book in a Box, like on the LLC, right?
Oh, In a Box. Cool.
Right. Because here's why. I feel like we've stumbled. In the future, I feel like a lot of people are going to want and need to create media, either for their business or for their personal brand or whatever it is. Huge amounts of people are going to have to learn. They're going to have to be good at creating media.
Yeah.
Right? And it seems kind of silly for someone who is an executive coach or whatever to have to learn how video works, how speech writing works, how book writing works. It doesn't make sense. Like, they know what they know. All they're trying to do is get what they know into a media form so that other people can see it, right? So we want to become the company that they go to do any media, right? Like, any media creation, once you have the idea, is just a series of steps. Like, once you know what you want to say, it's just a series of steps to put it into a book. Once you know what, you know, like, if you have the idea, it's just a series of steps to put it into a speech or into a pitch deck or into a presentation or a video course or anything, right? So what we think is that we can essentially automate the process of going from idea to finished media product. We started with books because books fit a certain – I knew that niche really well.
Right.
And it fit a certain profile. Like, we can start with a high-end clients, high profit, high margin. We didn't have to raise money. But eventually – we want to do everything all across the board. If you're turning an idea into a finished product, we want to have an in a box for it. Speech in a box, platform in a box, book in a box, all of it.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, video in a box. There's a million things that people need out there. And I'm starting to see this kind of consolidation as well. Like, listen, come here to get this stuff executed. And there's so much information out there. People are drowning in it. What was that old saying? They're drowning in information, starving for wisdom, or something similar to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Starving for execution. Yep. Just do it. I know what I need to do. I don't need to learn how the engine works. I just kind of want to get in and turn the key and go. Are there any resources there that you're looking for that maybe my listeners or anybody else out there? It's like, hey, listen, we're looking to add this on. It's kind of a way that we can help, you know, provide you with any resources if you're looking for them.
What do you mean?
Are there service providers? Are there people, employees, any kind of nuts you're trying to crack right now or looking for? I mean, I get a lot of listeners and they might be like, shit, I'd totally do this, or this is what my company does, or I'm happy.
Oh, you mean like, well, anyone who wants to work with us, we've got a career page. We're always taking applications. We've got, dude, it's crazy, man. We've got 6,000 people on our mailing list for job announcements. Like,
wow.
I know it's pretty nuts. So obviously anyone who's interested in this, just go to bookinabox.com. I think there's a careers or join our tribe is a link on there. And anyone who wants to talk about this stuff or whatever, just my email is tucker@bookinabox.com. I'm easy to reach.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. That's really cool. I like that you're approaching this like really, really, detailed and professionally, like, yeah, we're going to build this out to kind of be a catch-all for anybody who's trying to explode their expertise, their credibility. And like you mentioned, that trust factor thing is so important. A mutual friend, Perry Belcher, I remember him once saying, I remembered this. He goes, it's never been harder to get somebody to spend that first dollar with you but it's never been easier to get them to continuously buy. Because, you know, that first, hey, now you've got social media, you've got Google, you've got all this stuff. If you don't have a great reputation, if you're full of crap, they can spot that a mile away and they got a million options. But when you get them, when you've built that trust, there's so many more options to just get them to keep coming back for more. And I kind of kept that in mind. And yeah, that whole thing about trust, building trust is really the key to it all. And
yeah, especially in the future, man, because you can't hide anymore. You can't scam people anymore. They're eventually going to find out.
Right.
So we're almost going backwards. Like we came from as humans, as naked apes, social apes. We came from a small tribal, we evolved in small tribal groups where everyone knew everyone. And building, you know, like your long-term credibility was crucial to integration in the tribe. And like, we kind of got away from that in an anonymous industrialized world, but now the world's been reconnected and we're going back to that, which is really actually weirdly more human than it used to be. Like, anonymity is not a normal human sort of condition, but tribalism is. That's what I was talking about with trust, is that's why if you're building a business, you look for the long term and you're like, all right, I'm going to do a great job with everyone I work with. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to build my name and I'm going to be someone that I can trust. Once you've built that asset for 5 or 10 years, that's something you can utilize then for the rest of your life. And it's really hard to build. That becomes a moat that no one else can cross because it takes years to build it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely. That's so important. And it, you know, you can screw it up with one, you know, you do something wrong. It can take a lifetime. What do they say to build your reputation and a moment to screw it up? But, but you're right. It does. It absolutely creates a moat that people can't touch because, you can't build trust overnight. I mean, you can try, but, and a book is really a great way to do that. I guess kind of come in full circle.
Well, it builds credibility. It doesn't build trust.
Right.
They're different. Credibility and authority. Once you have a book, people know, okay, this person is smart and they, are displaying their intelligence and knowledge to the world that, so I can check it now. Mm-hmm. I don't have to trust them. I can check it. And then you check the book and it's great. And you're like, all right, now I can trust them a little bit. Because I have read their book and I see what they think and it makes a lot of sense. That's how you build trust is slow steps of doing what you say you're going to do, which is what a book is an implicit promise to give something to someone. There's some ROI. People buy nonfiction books because they expect an ROI.
Right,
if you
exactly.
deliver that in your book, then that makes you credible and then they now trust you at least a little bit.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, the quality of the book matters immensely. So I can attest, as I said, I've been reading, is it John Rulin? Is that his name?
Yeah,
his Rulin. Book and then your book in a box one. I mean, it's a very powerful strategy. It's one of the things that I've done just helping my clients, you know, get a book off the ground, although I don't personally do that anymore because I know how much I take that back. I don't help them write it anymore because I know how much work that can be just personally going in and doing that. I like having somebody like yourself as a potential referral source for clients who, you know, may want that and then, you know, come back to me. I help them capitalize on it, et cetera. But, any other non-business or fun related books that you've got, you know, kind of planned? You're such an amazing writer that, I know you're probably done with the fratire days. I think I've heard you say, but is there anything else in your?
No, I mean, it's mostly for the next 6 months to a year. It's pretty much all book stuff, book in a box stuff. It's all like that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know. But I'm only 40. I've got all kinds of. I got decades of business ahead of me. I'm sure I'll do other stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure you will. Cool. Well, Tucker, this has been really awesome. I really enjoyed a chance to kind of, you know, hear these strategies, go deep and hear kind of the not just how to create a book, but other ways to utilize it and leverage on those and hear the things that you're moving forward on. If there's anything that I can personally do or any of my listeners to, you know, help you speed that up, by all means, you know, don't hesitate to reach out. Let me know. I know a lot of people and I've got a lot of resources that, you know, may be useful for you going forward in the future. To, you know, my listeners, I definitely encourage them to check out Book in a Box and the free book. What is it? Bookinabox.com/bacon.
Yep.
Yep. And you guys can download it there. As I said, my friend Shalina just like 20 minutes before we jumped on the phone. She was asking me for the exact same thing. So you know that's kind of a sign that you're onto something hot. And it's not going away anytime soon. By the way, are you a coffee drinker? I'm happy to send you a bag of the coffee.
Yeah, dude, of course. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think I got your office address here. I'll make sure I send it to you. I don't know if there's anything else you want to add, but man, I would just really appreciate the time and, everything you shared with us here.
No, man, it was fantastic. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. For my listeners, if this is a strategy that you're thinking about doing, let me ask you this. This is something I didn't kind of cover. What is the customer's or prospective customer's journey with you? If they are interested, they go to Book in a Box. Do they apply? Do they jump on the phone? Yeah. What's the story?
Just go to Book in a Box. There's a little form at the bottom. Fill it out. We'll follow up right away, in the next, 24 hours. It's a real human who follows up. You get on the phone with them. Kind of ask you questions, figure out if you're a good fit for us. Then we answer any questions you have to figure out if this makes sense for you. And then if so, then we start moving forward. Nice. I mean, we right now, we're not backed up. So we can get started pretty quick with clients.
Well, I love to hear it. And I encourage everybody to go check that out. And if you have any questions for me personally, I urge you to send an email to askbrad@baconwrapbusiness.com. It is a personal email. I do read them, whether you've got insight and feedback or you're kind of stuck in your own business, whether you've got a book and you want to know how to better monetize it, or you, your sales have kind of topped out, you're kind of frustrated and stuck. I got a lot of tricks in my bag, and I'm happy to share those with you, kind of give you a second opinion on what might, be a better strategy for you going forward. Just send that email to askbrad@baconwrapbusiness. And I encourage you to share this. Tag me, maybe tag Tucker on Twitter. What are you at, Tucker Max?
Yep.
Twitter. Cool. And let us know what you think of the show. Tucker, thanks again, man. I really appreciate it. And I know you're a busy guy, so I'll let you get going. But to all my listeners, if you like this, keep listening. Got some more good stuff coming up. And we'll talk to you next week.